Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, here to tell you about my new podcast, Search Engine. Search Engine was one of the very best new podcasts of 2023, according to Vulture, Vogue, Time Magazine, and The Economist. We answer fascinating questions about business, tech, and history. Questions like, why are drug dealers putting fentanyl in everything? Who should be in charge of artificial intelligence? How did ADHD medication get so popular so fast? Listen and follow Search Engine with PJ Vogt wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The content in this episode might be disturbing for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
It's early 1984 in a bustling television studio in L.A. There's an audience of punks just like New Wave Theater. But unlike New Wave Theater, this ain't hokey anymore. It's a big crew, a control booth. It's a real production coming to you from KTLA. New Wave Theater's gone corporate thanks to Harold Ramis. After Peter's death, Harold introduced David Jove to a TV exec named Bill Cameron. Here's Bill.
So David came in, and I found him to be enchanting.
The devil is a brilliant prankster, but the greatest trick he ever pulled was making David Jove enchanting to some people. Definitely not to me, but I guess some people found him endearing. Anyway, David pitches Bill a TV show idea. It's a spin on the New Wave Theater formula.
What he was doing was something called The Top, and it was an entertainment variety hour.
Bill's interested, so he sets up a meeting for them at MGM. In the meeting, the suits have a question for David.
What's going to make your show different? Tell me, what happens when the lights go up and the camera goes on? What do I see? And Joe, and we hadn't rehearsed this, hadn't talked about it, David said, you see 17 little ducklings and a llama on the set. And they're running around, and it's a set like Johnny Carson has on Tonight Show, but they're ducklings and a llama on there. And that's what you see. And it sold the show because it was so...
It was clever.
It was clever. It was different.
The suits green light a pilot. It's a huge break for David. Despite its roots in public access, New Wave Theater had been a real TV show on national cable TV. But the top was going to be on a whole nother level.
This was going upscale quite a bit.
This was going to be, how big a budget was this going to be?
This, in those days, I think we were talking $300,000.
In other words, a good chunk of change. Which brings us back to that TV studio in L.A. David and Harold are filming the pilot for The Top, and the pressure is on. Jove skulks around, creating tension, but Harold tries to bring a sense of calm. It's thanks to him that there's a level of professionalism on the set.
So Harold Ramis enters the scene and is like, okay, this is going to be a real TV production.
That's Michael Dare, a film critic for L.A. Weekly.
This is no longer your underground New Wave theater that's shown as part of Night Flight on the USA Network. This is going to be on an actual television network that's going to have commercials, and you're going to be the director in the booth, and there's going to have to be a script that everybody's going to have to follow. You're going to hire a writer, and David says, well, I don't need a script. And Harold Ramis says to him, you're going to hire a writer. And so David Jove comes to me and says, will you be the writer, the head writer of The Top? And I said, well, sure. What do you want me to do? And he says, nothing. You're not going to write a single word. I'm going to write every single word that everybody says on this show. And I'm only hiring you because Harold Ramis says that I have to hire a writer.
Now that he's got a writer, all Jove needs is a celebrity host. So Harold Ramis picks up the phone and calls in a favor from one of the biggest comedians in town, a guy looking to get back to his TV roots, a guy named Cornelius.
Everybody knows Chevy Chase is one of the biggest assholes on earth. You can't read anything about him without someone telling a story about what a fucking asshole he is. Nobody likes him, except me. I had the best meeting I've ever had with Chevy Chase because Harold Ramis was in the room. Harold Ramis calls a meeting. He says, okay, David, bring your writer. I'll bring Chevy Chase. We're going to sit together and figure out what this show is.
So Michael's in the room with Chevy Chase, Harold Ramis, and David Jove. Chevy stands up and starts talking.
And it was hilarious and brilliant. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be the head writer of the Chevy Chase show.
Except that's not what happens. Jove puts the kibosh on every single one of Chevy's ideas.
No, we're not going to do that. Oh, I don't want to do that. No, we're not going to do that. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to keep cutting back to the sound booth, and all the technicians are going to be animals. And when we cut to the audience, it's going to cut to a bunch of baby ducks.
Oh, no, not more baby ducks.
So we kept having meetings and meetings and meetings at which nothing was decided except that nobody was allowed to do anything if David Jove didn't tell him to do it. I wrote a monologue for Chevy. He turned it down. Chevy wrote a monologue for himself. He turned it down. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. It was all getting up to the first day of, you know, the production, the live show, and not one word had been written for Chevy Chase. Not one word. He didn't know what to do.
And now they're out of time. The audience is in the studio waiting, and Chevy Chase has no script. Backstage, Jove walks up to Chevy to give his host some words of encouragement.
Jove went up to him right before the cameras went on and put a fright wig on his head and said, okay, you're a punk. You're a punk rocker. Just get out there and win.
The show starts. Chevy Chase comes on stage in a shitty punk rock wig.
And now, from Hollywood, California, the entertainment capital of the world, we welcome you to The Top!
Surrounded by real punks, he looks ridiculous. What happens next makes the news.
Chevy Chase was taping a television show in Los Angeles last night before an invited audience of punk rockers. Things seemed to get out of hand, and here's what happened.
Chevy comes out on stage in his stupid wig and starts improvising. It's not too long before the punks in the crowd get restless. One of the people watching is my dear friend, Durf Scratch. Durf played bass in Fear, the band that got kicked off of Saturday Night Live.
Durf, to me, was the punk poster boy.
That's Alan Sachs.
Durf was a hardcore... Durf looked like a preppy. He wore saddle shoes, but he was a hardcore punk.
I remember one time, Durf asked me to go to his apartment, and he gave me some couple of lines of Speed, and it burned my nose so bad that I never did Speed again. So God bless Durf, and thank you, man. Anyway, Durf is in the crowd for the taping of The Top, and he starts heckling Chevy.
Come on, man. Go dance. Come on. Go on over there.
Durf was yelling, "You homo, you homo," and Chevy said, "Who said that? Come on up here. Tell that to me." And Durf didn't wait a second and went running up to the stage. He ran up to the apron, pushed himself up on the riser, and ran over to Chevy and kicked him in the nuts.
Apparently, Chevy had just had a vasectomy, so this kick was particularly unwelcome. Other punks jump on stage, too.
Pandemonium broke loose. I mean, I produced many television shows. I've never been involved where a fight like that broke out in the audience.
And then Chevy Chase leaves and never comes back. Normal people would give up after a shitstorm like that, but not David Jove. He badgers Harold Ramis to help him make another pilot. Harold reluctantly agrees, but with a new host and some conditions.
And this time with Andy Kaufman instead of Chevy Chase. And this time Jove isn't allowed to write anything, isn't allowed to direct, isn't allowed to... Harold actually did handcuff him to a chair in the director's booth where he had to give directions to the cameraman to do what they were going to do.
Even with Joe physically restrained, things go off the rails. Although this time, it's not completely his fault.
Now, let me tell you a little about this video. It's called, it's by Randy Newman, and it's called I Love L.A. And now it starts off with a bum. You see a bum, and it's all in black and white, so you think the whole thing's going to be black and white, right? But it turns out that then, after a few minutes of this, the thing turns to color. Okay? So that's a surprise. That's a surprise.
Now, Andy Kaufman is a comedic genius. Have you ever seen him do Elvis Presley? It's fucking hilarious. But on this taping of The Top, he was not at his best. The audience might have assumed he was having an off night, but in reality, Kaufman was dying of cancer. Here's Ken Dow, a New Wave Theater fan who was at the taping.
It was obvious he was so far gone sick, he shouldn't have been there at all. I don't know why he agreed to do it, just because he wanted to do one last performance or something. And you know, a week, 2 weeks later, he was gone. He was dead.
It was Andy Kaufman's last ever TV appearance. He died in May of 1984, and The Top, such as it was, ended with him, a pilot that never went anywhere. By the time they started filming The Top, it had been almost a year since Peter Iver's murder. No arrest had been made. No one had been charged. Across the city and the scene, those who loved Peter began to move on, some reluctantly, some angrily. But one person who couldn't let things go was David Jove. With The Top, he tried to revive New Wave Theater, but couldn't make it work. And all the while, he was literally living in the cave, surrounded by Peter's stuff, grisly souvenirs he had stolen from the crime scene.
He was obsessed with the murder.
He would answer the phone, "Who killed Peter Ivers?" for at least a year after Peter's death. So it was like he was on this crusade to find out who killed him. And obviously that was the cover-up
He grabbed Peter's quilt. I remember it was green and had blood on it.
Right.
And he kept it, and he slept with it in his bedroom.
All of this fed into the gossip. Could David Jove have something to do with Peter's death? Today, we try to answer that question head on and pay tribute to our friend Peter and the musical legacy he left behind. I'm Penelope Spheris, and this is Peter and the Acid King.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, here to tell you about my new podcast, Search Engine. Search Engine was one of the very best new podcasts of 2023, according to Vulture, Vogue, Time Magazine, and The Economist. We answer fascinating questions about business, tech, and history. Questions like, why are drug dealers putting fentanyl in everything? Who should be in charge of artificial intelligence? How did ADHD medication get so popular so fast? Listen and follow Search Engine with PJ Vogt wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Cowie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made raisins dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to get you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on Storybutton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Sometime after Peter's death, David Jove invited Don Bowles over to his place. Don was the drummer in the Germs. Anyway, here's where things get a little creepier. I'm going to hand it over to Alan Sachs for this part, because y'all know I don't do creepy.
So when I talked to Don Bowles from The Germs, he told me a story about David Jove that I keep thinking about and seeing as clear as day.
He invited me to come over, and he played me these cassettes and microcassettes of psychics to whom he had sent Peter's watch, the one that Peter had been wearing at the time of the murders.
Apparently, along with the bloody blanket and sequin jacket, Jove also took a watch that belonged to Peter. So Don is sitting there across from David Jove. I could see that so clearly. Jove talking to Don, showing him the watch.
And he kept looking at me, just like really staring into my
eyes. I see David's
eyes.
Face.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, he was like, you know, veins are coming out, you know. The coke had obviously gone in. And he's going, you know. And just, well, what do you think?
So David wants Don to listen to the tape with him. Don is like, okay, but a little creeped out. You know what I mean?
There was this one where the guy sounded like Peter. And he's like living a moment in time when this watch was last worn by the person when they were alive. He's like in a trance, right? And he's channeling this. He's like, oh, hey, how you doing? What are you doing? Oh, hey, oh my God, no. Oh no, God, what are you, you're killing me. It was the most horrifying death shrieks of a person being killed that I have ever in my life heard. And it sounded like Peter. And David didn't tell these people whose watch it was or anything, or that there was a murder involved or anything, right? It sounded like Peter. This person didn't know who Peter was. This was like it was the most blood-curdling stuff you could even imagine hearing. It's like watching someone you love die or something in this agonizing, awful way. There's nothing you could do. It was that bad. And Dave is just like looking at me like, well, what do you think? I'm like, well, David, sounds like he knew the person.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah. Anyway, check this one out.
This is shocking and freaking weird. But Don told me that David was totally calm. Think about that. The tape appears to capture the moment his friend was killed, seemingly by someone he knew. And Jove seems fine with it.
There was nothing incriminating about Jove's behavior that day with Don Bowles. To some extent, it was just Jove being Jove, an average day in the life of an occult-obsessed drug fiend. But it definitely wasn't normal, and it's the kind of story that explains why some of us suspected Jove from the very beginning.
David Jove had motive, means, and opportunity. He was angry Peter quit New Wave Theater. He was already known to have been violent and an unpredictable cat, and he knew where Peter was going when he left the cave that night. He was also the guy who many say was first at the crime scene. He chimed his way past the cops, and he was the guy that took a bloody blanket, a watch, and a pink sequin jacket as though they were trophies.
Given all of this, you'd think the cops would have picked David up and questioned him, but actually, they didn't have to. Here's Ed Oakes.
David walked into the police station, the next day voluntarily. He asked to meet with a detective on the case. He told the detective that he was in the country illegally, and he told the cops that he didn't do it. The cops took down his statement, and they, for whatever reason, they discounted David as a person of interest.
On the day after Peter's death, David Jove, who was apparently a fugitive from Canada living under a pseudonym, walked into a police station to chat with the cops. He told them he had nothing to do with Peter's murder, and they sent him on his way. It's so ridiculous to those who knew Peter and David that it's laughable, literally. Here's Alan talking to former rocker and current addiction counselor Bob Forrest.
I've spoken to the cold case cops. It's not in the casebook.
That they spoke to David?
They didn't interview him. They didn't.
What?
He was never of suspicion.
That gives you even more faith in cops, doesn't it?
Some people say that the cops did question Jove, and that he was later dropped as a suspect. But Alan asked the LAPD directly, and they said they never took a serious look at Jove.
The real mystery to me isn't why the cops dropped Jove as a suspect. It's why Jove went to the cops in the first place. He had spent decades being paranoid about people finding out who he was. Then, all of a sudden, Peter's dead, and he feels the need to reach out and tell the authorities his secrets. Why is that? Maybe he was worried about his dead friend and wanted to help with the investigation. Or maybe he wanted to stay close to the cops so he could stay one step ahead of them.
That's one possibility. Or maybe Jove was trying to get ahead of any questions by acting like he had nothing to hide. Whatever the reason, it was an odd thing for him to do. But was Jove really capable of murdering someone? According to some people, maybe. He was rumored to have a very violent past.
He'd also, in the past, when he was raving back in the cave days, he used to hint that he'd somehow accidentally killed somebody.
That's Maggie Abbott, the agent who brought Marianne Faithfull to the cave. She was Jove's friend. According to her, Jove told her straight up, "I killed a guy." No, not Peter. A different guy. Before that.
It was tied in with the fact that he'd taken a huge overdose of LSD because he had it in the fridge and the bottle tipped over and it dribbled down into a cake and he ate the cake, a chocolate cake, ate the cake.
And when the cops apparently questioned him about the crime, he had been too high to answer.
He allowed the cigarette to burn down and burn his fingers. And he sat there and it was burning his flesh. And they were so, it persuaded them or convinced them that he was too high to make any sense.
Well, that's one way to get out of jail.
And that's how he got away with whatever it was he got away with.
The idea that Jove would have confessed something to Maggie is interesting because to confess implies that you think you've done something wrong, that you have a moral code. Here's Nicholas Schreck, a friend of Jove's. He and Jove both shared an interest in the teachings of Aleister Crowley. And according to Crowley, killing someone wasn't necessarily something to feel guilty about.
I also think, and this is more of an intuition, that Jove, like Crowley and other people of that ilk, would think that taking a life would be like a sacrifice, and in almost like an ancient shamanic tribal way, that he would be taking power by taking a life.
Crowley taught that power was assumed through the exchange of energy, but he also taught that taking power wasn't immoral. In Crowley's view, there was no difference between consensual sex and sexual assault, or natural death and murder. In my view, Crowley had his head up his ass so far he was looking at brown wallpaper.
I think that this is the way Jove thought about things. I'd think whatever it was, it probably wasn't strictly impulsive hatred or criminality. It struck me when the murder happened that he would be more than capable of doing it because I don't think he had any moral sense whatsoever.
On the night before his death, Peter Ivers quit New Wave Theater. It was a major blow for the show. But was that enough to cause Jove to murder his friend? Maybe Jove was so spaced out on drugs and Aleister Crowley that he wasn't thinking straight, that he followed Peter back to his loft, broke in, and killed Peter in his sleep. Then, in an effort to cover his tracks, Jove ran to the cops and offered to help find the killer. At the end of the day, it's just another theory of the case. No witnesses have ever placed David Jove at Peter's loft that night. Maybe the biggest reason to doubt Jove as the killer was that Peter's death was a huge blow to Jove's creative aspirations. It put a definitive end to New Wave Theater, and Jove's career never recovered. In any event, if David Jove did kill Peter, he never confessed. Or did he? Here's some clips from the last episode of New Wave Theater. As you'll hear, Jove edited audio from news reports about Peter's death into the episode. Meanwhile, what's playing out on screen is creepy as all hell.
What's the meaning of life?
Police are still looking for leads in the murder of 36-year-old musician Peter Ivers. Our Bill Van Amburgh talks about that case now and gives us this portrait of Ivers, who was a pretty interesting man.
They knew best was the irreverent, zany host of New Wave Theater on cable, a showcase for artists' new wave music and...
In that last episode of New Wave Theater, after Peter died, Jove is fucking creepy. He's wearing this rubber mask, just staring into the camera. He cries, but the mask distorts his features. I don't know what he was thinking doing this. It's really disturbing to look at now. He wore the mask outside for like a week after that. But eventually, the mask came off, and David went back to the cave. He never made another TV show after The Top. David Jove died in 2004 of cancer.
If there's any hard evidence that he killed Peter, it's lost to history or hidden inside the LAPD's case file. Today, many people who know Peter Ivers know him through New Wave Theater. There are hours of footage of Peter hosting the show, performing those weird monologues, interviewing the bands, but all the while, he's playing a character, a version of himself filtered through David Jove. Peter's music, on the other hand, is an expression of his true self. Way back in episode 2, we played a clip of him singing In Heaven at a party. This is how I remember Peter. Direct, sweet, confident. Here's Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo, who used to perform In Heaven at their shows.
I think he contributed to the part of music that was forming in our community in L.A. at that time. He was into pure art and pure ideas, and I think L.A. was lucky to have him when we did. He was very artistic, and his ideas were very artistic. And, you know, I think he wasn't, like, tied down by trying to make a hit record or trying to, you know, see if he could get on the radio.
Jello Biafra of the Dead Kennedys agrees. A lot of that had to do with the uniqueness of Peter's voice.
As long as you're doing, the minute you open your mouth, people know who it is. And one way to do that is if your voice is incredibly and possibly even deliberately obnoxious. And it's not as though Peter's voice was that different from mine either. So I would say he was actually crept in there as one of the formative influences of my own voice.
My sense, in retrospect, is that Peter represented something, a kind of an intersection between popular entertainment, a new kind of creative energy that wasn't copying things, but was actually using the tools to make things that were fresh, yet not being a kind of snob about trying to reach an audience.
That's Ron Howard. Peter wrote the theme for Ron's first movie, Grand Theft Auto.
The mere fact that he was there kind of writing the theme on a harmonica just tells you that he had confidence that these things could be approached in a new way. There was a dimension to what he was offering popular culture that suddenly a bit limited.
His music was hard to define, sitting somewhere between genres. It was cool and strange and experimental. During Peter's life, that limited his commercial appeal. But a funny thing happened between 1983 and now. The culture caught up with Peter. You can hear Peter's influence everywhere. That's partly because many of the people he touched went on to have towering creative careers of their own, and they have kept his memory alive. One of Peter's early credits was In Heaven, a song he wrote for David Lynch's film Eraserhead. Now, here's a song from Lynch's TV show Twin Peaks, It aired almost 10 years after Peter's death. Just you. Sounds like Peter, doesn't it? Here's film critic and writer Kayla Janisse.
Peter Ivers was an incredible creative influence on everybody he ever met. When he moved out to L.A. originally to score Tim Hunter's AFI movies, Tim Hunter, who was a writer-director who would end up writing the great film Over the Edge and then directing River's Edge in the 80s, so these really iconic and important teen youth in revolt or teen angst films. But when he moved out to Los Angeles, he had a girlfriend for many, many years named Lucy Fisher. And she, you know, as Peter's pursuing his sort of independent musical projects and stuff like that, she got a job originally as a script reader at United Artists and then quickly sort of rose through the ranks as a film executive.
Peter's girlfriend, Lucy Fisher, has played an important role in cultivating Peter's legacy.
And as she progressed in her field, she started hiring all of Peter's friends. So basically, all these musical influences, all these filmic theater influences, basically she has admitted this herself, that she knew everything because of Peter. She knew all about music because of Peter. And was able to use her position to give opportunities to a lot of these people that kickstarted their own careers or gave them, you know, gave us movies like Caddyshack, you know, like Harold Ramis and Doug Kenny from National Lampoon and Saturday Night Live. Like, even when Lucy Fisher was heading up Zoetrope Studios and she arranged the private screening that eventually got David Lynch the job to direct The Elephant Man.
A few years ago, the record label RVNG got the rights to Peter's music and released the compilation Becoming Peter Ivers. Here's Jello Biafra.
Now that I hear Becoming Peter Ivers, all those demos are much more smooth and honing his voice more to make it more accessible to a pop, if not even middle-of-the-road audience, I don't know, which makes me wonder all the more why, when he had his big chance to make a Warner Brothers album, he made Terminal Love first instead of what became the second Warner's album first.
All of it makes you wonder what could have been.
I also wonder what might have happened with him as far as people not just looking at him as this goofy guy they had to put up with for New Wave Theater, although a lot of people who tried to dial in on those raps at the end realize, my God, this guy is a heavy dude, and he's more than a little brilliant, too. I wonder how things might have gone for him if he had started putting out his own records himself or gone with an independent or something who wanted to present him as he was. You know, whether he might be more remembered or remembered differently and more in depth today.
I was delighted that there was some things out there, but I wish that there were more. And I know that, you know, some people, including my mom, have these old VHS tapes and probably audio tapes and archives that they don't really know what to do with.
That's Violet Ramis, Harold and Anne's daughter.
You know, I would love to see all of his archive out there and made public so people could not only, you know, understand and experience his music, but just really see who he was as a person, because he was involved and interested in so many things, and he really, you know, studied and just seemed passionate about, you know, everything he was doing.
If you're interested in exploring Peter's full artistic legacy, to an extent, you can. Lucy Fisher donated Peter's personal archive to Harvard. It makes you wonder, what would Peter think of all this? Here's Mark Mothersbaugh again.
I think if Peter was still here right now, you would be looking back at him and saying, my God, that guy blew Don Ho out of the water. He's the best performer we've ever had here in Las Vegas. And he would, everything from Cirque du Soleil to to The Price is Right. He would have pulled in every piece of high and low art and exhibited them and celebrated them.
Some of Peter's biggest commercial successes have happened after his death. Here's his songwriting partner, Franny Goldie.
Every song that we wrote, maybe minus one or something, something happened with it, whether it was recorded. I went to two major song festivals, one in Korea and one in Japan, and I won awards for both songs. I sang them live. One of them I sang with a 50-piece orchestra. He would have just been blown away to hear his song, his words, and everything, you know, sung with this 50-piece orchestra in the Budokan in Japan. I mean, he would have been over the moon, over the moon. And I remember, like, instinctively, I didn't even have to think about it. When I finished the song, and here I was, like, I don't know how many thousands of people that place holds. And it was, for me, an amazing experience that I would never have had. I finished the song, and I looked up, and I said, "Love you, Pete."
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. I'm Abby, a mother of two, and I had these battles myself. Endless excuses, delay tactics, and many tears and tantrums. But I've created a solution. The perfect kids podcast that makes bedtime a dream. It's called Koala Moon, and it's hosted by me, Abby. With over 300 episodes, packed with original stories and sleep meditations, Koala Moon makes bedtimes easy and enjoyable. Episodes start out engaging and really rather magical, but as they progress, they gently slow to a calm and relaxing pace to have your little ones out like a light. Since launching in 2022, Koala Moon has helped with over 20 million nights sleep and received over 6,000 five-star reviews. Win back your evenings. Listen to Koala Moon now on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Parents, ready to discover a new educational and interactive podcast for kids? Join Stories for Kids by Lingo Kids, where episodes are packed with fun activities. Right, Elliot?
Oh, yes! We learned how to recycle at the beach.
That was great fun. Callie, what do you say?
It was. And that time when we did the science experiment and Billy made Raisin's dance.
That is so cool, Billy.
He did. Not to mention when a certain Elliot took up swimming classes with Lisa.
That was me.
Bet you can't catch me.
I'm going to get you.
All this fun and more in our Stories for Kids. Lingo Kids Stories for Kids is now available on StoryButton, the kid-friendly device for screenless podcast listening. Listen to Stories for Kids on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce.
Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Here's the thing. I spent 40 years wondering who killed Peter Ivers, and I talked to everyone I could think of about it. I was hoping there was something someone would say that would be the smoking gun. It's hard. David Jove was such a big character, and Penelope and I would not have gunned this at all if he was still around. It's one of the first conversations we had about this show.
You said to me, is David still alive?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no. And you said, do you remember what you said?
I probably said, good.
You said, okay, I'll do it.
Is that right?
I'll do the show. If when you knew he wasn't alive, you said, you said, I'll do it. And do you remember what you said about him? Because I do.
I know what I think about David, but you go ahead and tell me what I don't remember.
Well, you told me he was one of the... First of all, you said, you know who I've met, who I've been around, where I grew up, and that guy is one of the scariest fuckers I've ever met.
I'm going to say the scariest.
The scariest. Yeah, that's exactly...
I don't scare easy.
That's what I say. That's what I'm saying. I know.
Yeah?
Yeah, no, and you were scared of him, too, so it's pretty fucking crazy.
I remember walking...
I was too close to all of this. I really cared about Peter and cared about Jove and about the scene. Maybe I was too close to see what really happened. And maybe I just liked hanging out at the cave too much. Courvoisier and Blow. After all these years, this mystery remains. I think what this case needs is fresh eyes, fresh perspectives. Regardless, I think Peter would just want people to appreciate his art. So, go out and listen to his music. I think you'll like it. I know you'll like it. There's something in there for everyone. Go watch New Wave Theater. It's weird as hell, but it's a piece of history.
I mean... Look, I'll just say it. For years, I've been absolutely certain that David Jove killed Peter Ivers. Now that I've learned all the available facts, I'm not so sure anymore. But maybe there's someone out there listening who does know the truth. If you have information on Peter Ivers' homicide, please reach out to the LAPD. The tip hotline is 1-877-LAWFUL. That's 1-877-529-3855. This is Peter and the Acid King. Bye, Peter. We miss you. Peter and the Acid King is based on interviews recorded and researched by Alan Sachs. It's produced by Imagine Audio, Alan Sachs Productions, and Awfully Nice for iHeartMedia. I'm your host, Penelope Spheris. The series is written by Caitlin Fontana. Peter and the Acid King is produced by Amber Von Schassen. The senior producer is Caitlin Fontana, and the supervising producer is John Asante. Our project manager is Katie Hodges. Our executive producers are Ron Howard, Brian Grazer, Cara Welker, Nathan Clokey, Alan Sachs, Jesse Burton, and Katie Hodges. The associate producers are Laura Schwartz, Dylan Kainrich, and Chris Statue. Co-producer on behalf of Shout Studios, Bob Emmer. Sound design and mix by Evan Arnett. Fact-checking by Catherine Barner. Original music composed by Alloy Trax. Music clearances by Barbara Hall. Voiceover recording by Voice Trax West. Show artwork by Michael Dare. Special thanks to Annette Van Duren. Thank you for listening.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics, in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.